Iran today.
The U.S. pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal, or JCPOA, on 8th May 2018. That was under its recently terminated former administration. With Joe Biden taking office as U.S. president, hopes ran high for that joint comprehensive plan of action, which he pledged to re-enter in his election campaign. But now he's ushering Iran to go first, to recommit to its obligations under the deal, so the U.S. would follow by returning to the deal. Oh, but Iran insists, it was you that left the deal. You took the first step out, so you take the first step back, or else.
A December urgency law is to get into action on the 21st of February, and that'll mean the end of free visits for nuclear inspectors to Iran who've been living in this country since the JCPOA of 2015. Unless the new U.S. administration returns to the deal unconditionally. But it looks like Joe Biden is banking on his four terms in office. Alas, action can't wait a full term. I'm Leila Faramarzia.
So, the Biden administration is now talking of mincing its way back into the deal only after Iran begins recommitting. The deal was between Iran and the UN Security Council permanent members. That's the US, UK, France, Russia, China, and Germany. Under UN Security Council Resolution 2231, the purpose of the deal was to curb Iran's nuclear program in return for lifting UN economic nuclear-related sanctions off this country. Iran complied, as verified 15 times, no less, by the UN's nuclear watchdog, the IAEA. Still, the US pulled out unilaterally and reinstated all UN sanctions as US sanctions. It has been a long-drawn process, and now economic sanctions are practically as good as sanctions on food, health, and medicine. Mr. Mackey is a political analyst who kindly makes the trip to Press TV studios for interviews. We had him on the show yet again.
Given all America's deal-breaking during its former administration, the whole world doesn't trust that country anymore, let alone Iran. So what hope do you see, really, for the revival of the JCPOA?
By signing the JCPOA, the Islamic Republic of Iran has shown that the only solution to the problems and all the challenges that exist in Iran's relations with the West can be resolved through dialogue and negotiation, and that there's no issue that cannot be resolved. It's unlikely for the U.S. to be able to continue pushing its proposals and plans to return to the JCPOA. It's an issue that can be resolved. Making simultaneous and concurrent moves to return to commitments is a logical idea. It's unlikely that the European governments will stay on the U.S. side for long. They will try to lay the groundwork for lifting sanctions and returning to commitments by consulting and negotiating with the parties to the deal.
Iran has come to a point where it refuses to sit and wait for its rights to be thrown at it breadcrumb at a time. So it decided to further exert pressure on Western signatories to the deal to get sanctions lifted once and for all. That is why on December 2, 2020, Parliament proposed the said law. The Strategic Act of the Islamic Consultative Assembly to remove sanctions. Mr. Izadi is professor of American Studies. I'm sure you'll find his viewpoint interesting.
The West insists on adding clauses to the JCPOA, such as interference with Iran's regional policy, scrapping its missile program. Where does this stem from? How much might it have to do with our regional rivals?
I think it's U.S. imperialism, basically. The United States wants to dictate its policies towards Iran, whether people in the White House belong to the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. And U.S. allies in the region basically take the lead from the United States. So I think the main problem is the United States. And the fact that Biden administration actually likes what Trump did to Iran, that's a problem.
Our experts say what they think of Iran's strategy of demanding a U.S. return to the deal before Iran recommits to lower levels of uranium enrichment with less advanced centrifuges in only the Natanz nuclear site. But please note, more important than a U.S. return to the deal is the U.S.'s lifting sanctions off this country. A U.S. return without sanctions relief would mean nothing. The Iranian leader's recent speech in response to U.S. policy has triggered Iranian strategy. Mr. Abolfat is an expert on Iran-America relations and an asset to the TV company. Press TV borrows him from time to time.
It appears Iran may have to further pressure other parties to the JCPOA, the Western parties to the JCPOA. What do you think Iran can now do?
Iran has not left the JCPOA. Iran remains a party to this multilateral agreement. Even a year after Donald Trump announced the U.S. withdrawal from the accord, Iran remained fully committed to the JCPOA. And the International Atomic Energy Agency issued periodic reports stating that Iran had fully complied with these obligations. But a year after it became clear that the Americans were not going to live up to their commitments and the Europeans were unable to meet their obligations, the Islamic Republic announced that it was gradually scaling back some of its commitments, while stressing that all those steps were reversible. Tehran said as soon as the other side, that is, the United States and Europe, fulfill their obligations, it will go back into full compliance.
Without sanctions relief, the deal would mean nothing because the whole point of the deal was that Iran show goodwill in proving its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes only, in return for sanctions lifting to encourage foreign trade with Iran, therefore boosting this country's economy. Whereas, never mind industrial or arms imports, even foreign clothes are hard to come by in Iran now.
The fact is that the solution to return to the JCPOA is not complicated. If there is a will to lift the sanctions and return to the JCPOA, it can be done with an executive order from U.S. President Joe Biden. But the Americans have always tried to have the upper hand in negotiations with Iran, even when the blame rests with them.
As a first step in reviving the JCPOA, Iran not only expects sanctions to be lifted before it recommits, it demands to verify U.S. actions before recomplying. The next step would be for the U.S. to compensate this country and its trade partners. Compensate for the damage Donald Trump's sanctions have done us and companies that suffered secondary sanctions for dealing with Iran. The unilateral U.S. sanctions are deemed illegal by experts at large, by the way.
As Parliament prepares to vote, I await my interviewee MP, whom I'll be bringing to you shortly with his viewpoint.
It's the Parliamentary Deputy Speaker, Mr. Ghazizadeh Hashemi, I bring you.
We expect that after all these years that we showed unilateral tolerance, Americans will live up to their commitments. First, they need to prove that they are trustworthy and spout off after. The Americans, whether the Democratic Obama, whose vice president was Mr. Biden, or the Republican Trump, are unreliable to us and must act to gain our trust. It's that simple.
Another MP I got to talk to is Mr. Rastine. It's his first tenure, but he appears to possess the passion to attempt long strides in any amount of time given.
Time is running out to salvage the JCPOA, that they call a landmark international deal. We are days away from the end of the deal. The U.S. and European countries should try and prize these remaining days by returning to their commitments, removing all sanctions, and facilitating the return of all the frozen assets of Iran to Tehran. Otherwise, the Islamic Republic of Iran has shown that it insists on the implementation of the Parliament's resolution.
We wrote the law to lift the sanctions according to Article 36 of the JCPOA, because the same law allows us to suspend some of our commitments if the West doesn't honor its obligations. We are still a party to the deal. We haven't withdrawn our participation from it. They need to carry out their commitments, so we do ours.
Now, while Iran proposes more for more, the U.S. is mincing in with an offer or demand of less for less. And Iran's said law may be their excuse for this, whereas Iran's law is a reaction to the U.S. pullout and the EU's lack of commitment to the deal to begin with. The E3 are the UK, France and Germany. They pledged to safeguard Iran's interests against the U.S. pullout by enacting an updated blocking statute on 7th August 2018 to nullify U.S. sanctions on countries trading with Iran. This was followed by a couple of trade mechanisms, finally known as INSTEX, Instrument in Support of Trade Exchanges. But nothing worked in the face of U.S. belligerence and European lack of will. Europe has, for its part, been trying to inch in with new demands to an already agreed deal, say, curbing Iran's regional presence and scrapping its ballistic missile program, when the deal was solely to supervise and control Iran's nuclear activity. But that backfired. I said the West strategy had backfired. Asking for more has meant getting less.
Iran's parliament has passed a law, and I think the executive branch will follow that law. Iran has a peaceful nuclear program. There is no reason for Iran to follow every restraint on its nuclear program that is under the nuclear agreement, because the other side is not following it. So Iran will continue its peaceful activities under NPT.
Now, what does Iran's said law exactly comprise? This policy of maximum or wise resistance manifested in maximum pressure on the U.S. and the international community. It's inked in a range of arenas. While aiming to get all sanctions on Iran lifted with Iran compensated for damages, it demands Iran's nuclear accomplishments to date be leveraged.
Iran has started enriching uranium to 20% purity. Iran has taken major step in the production of metallic uranium, and the deadline for the implementation of a parliament resolution is imminent. So Iran has chosen maximum resistance and maximum retaliation against their maximum pressure.
But so far, these Iranian measures haven't been enough. Our MP gives us an example of how far Iran might next go to exert further pressure on the West.
Certainly, the Islamic Republic will end the additional cooperation with the IAEA based on this resolution. This means that the additional protocol, which is a set of extra rules setting Iran's diplomatic, technical, and scientific relations with the IAEA, will surely expire, and Iran will end the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol.
No one can trust the United States. The experience of negotiations and talks with Washington over the past decade has shown that the Americans are highly unreliable and have to be spoken to with distrust.
Our narrative still goes on, but let's give a chance to other media outlets for a bit to see what they have to say on the issue. And what would be our other media outlets of the day? Newsweek and Ausat. Newsweek tells of how Iran is going to replace the West, possibly. Iran courts China, Russia, as new nuclear deal with declining U.S. storms. Iranian officials are continuing to build stronger ties with Russia and China as Tehran faces what could be a prolonged standoff with President Joe Biden over any possible revival of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, or nuclear deal. Biden is demanding that Iran scale back its nuclear program in line with JCPOA restrictions before American sanctions are lifted. However, Iranian leaders have said they will not return to compliance until the U.S. eases sanctions and does the same. Tehran is casting around for allies to help offset American pressure, along with the threat from regional U.S. allies like Israel and Saudi Arabia.
Russia and China have repeatedly spoken out against Trump's withdrawal from the deal and have urged Biden to recommit to the accord with no conditions. In recent weeks, Tehran has been lauding ties with both countries as the nuclear issue remains stalled. Now, French President Macron has offered to broker talks with Israel and Saudi Arabia present, and Al-Sadr refers exactly to that. Iran snubs Macron's offer to mediate Washington-Tehran nuclear talks. Tehran has rejected French President Emmanuel Macron's offer to be an honest broker in talks between Iran and the U.S. The nuclear deal has no need for a mediator, Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh told reporters, without specifically mentioning France. But in response to a question about recent comments by the country's president, Khatibzadeh also insisted that there was no need to renegotiate the nuclear deal. When a document is written with such precision and length, it means it is not necessary to discuss it again. It is all there in more than 150 pages, he said, of the deal officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. The spokesman added that European states must themselves return to their commitments under the nuclear deal with Iran. Newsweek tells of how an Iranian commander has shown Iran doesn't have to be passive. Iran commander tells U.S. take a lesson from military drills amid nuclear deal standoff. The commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, IRGC, is celebrating the service's most recent military drills, saying the U.S. and other enemies should take a lesson from the firepower on display. IRGC Commander Major General Hossein Salami told reporters that the Great Prophet military exercises held last week, beginning February the 9th, in Iran's southwestern province of Khuzestan, showcased the service's authority, defense, resistance, and aggression, according to Mehr News Agency. The ground forces of the IRGC guarantee our security, independence, honor, and dignity, and they shone brightly in their latest war game, Salami said, on the sidelines of the drill. The enemy should take a lesson from the firepower showcased by Iranian forces, he added, a reference to the U.S. and regional enemies like Israel and Saudi Arabia. So that's it for the news segment. Do stay with me for the continuation of our own narrative. There's more to Iran's December law. It also demands the blockade of European initiatives to include the issue of Iran's ballistic missile development, enriching uranium to a high level, 20%, enriching uranium using advanced generation centrifuges, the passage in Majlis of Parliament of legislation for non-cooperation with the UN nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, and expulsion of its inspectors. More demands coming up in a bit.
The message of the Parliament's strategic action to the United States was that one cannot claim they adhere to the rule of law and maintain favorable diplomatic relations, all the while disrupting the international law with their inappropriate and destructive behavior.
Iran's maximum resistance policy further demands, in the ballistic missile arena, using the launch of satellites into space as civilian scientific activity, to demonstrate Iran's capability in producing long-range missiles. In the conventional military arena, shows of conventional strength by conducting extensive military exercises to include the use of advanced suicide drones. In the political arena, it insists on all-out diplomatic pressure to safeguard Iran's nuclear program, which is a national project agreed by all the country's institutions.
Looking at the situation from Tehran, you realize that being flexible with the Americans is the most stupid thing that you can do, because they don't value cooperation. So Iran is not going to make the same mistake that Iran did with the Obama administration, basically trusting the American government to continue its commitments after an administration has finished.
And why is Iran so adamant in combating sanctions and strengthening its position? A look at sanctions imposed on this country after the U.S. trashed the JCPOA in May 2018 should suffice to answer that. They almost immediately began in November 2018. To summarize, in September 2019, a U.S. official stated that the United States will sanction whoever deals with Iran or purchases its oil. Also in September 2019, New sanctions targeted the Iranian National Bank. On 21st February 2020, Iran was placed on the FATF blacklist. FATF being the Financial Action Task Force, an intergovernmental organization for combating money laundering. Next, the U.S. proposed to extend the global arms embargo on Iran. But the United Nations Security Council rejected that resolution. Hence, the U.S. moved to unilaterally trigger snapback sanctions, although it had walked away from the Iran nuclear deal and no longer had logical, legitimate claim on it.
It seems the Biden administration, it doesn't know if they like the Trump administration policies towards Iran or not. It seems that they criticize Trump a lot, but they actually like Trump policies towards Iran, and they want to keep those policies, and they keep talking about leverage. They like leverage, which means they like sanctions.
In September 2020, then-President Trump imposed sweeping new sanctions on Iran to curb its missile and conventional arms programs. On the 8th of October 2020, the U.S. targeted 18 Iranian banks. Question is, why this pursuit of a maximum pressure policy when it has failed? The goal was basically to bring Iran to its knees by bringing its oil exports down to zero, whereas those exports have slowly but steadily only increased, after a serious low, of course, since the U.S.'s harshest ever sanctions. And now, oil analysts foresee an additional 500,000 Iranian oil barrels coming back on the market in the next 2 to 3 months, possibly with U.S. approval.
The intensification of sanctions is no longer a major concern for Iran, because there are no more sanctions left to be imposed now. Even if the Europeans want to join the United States in introducing sanctions, there is nothing left to boycott. As a result, sanctions as a tool has lost its function against Iran.
The revolution's leader's take on the matter pretty much sums it all up. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said in reference to former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton and his boss Donald Trump, one of those first-rate fools said they would celebrate New Year 2019 in Tehran. That person has been sent to history's trash can. And his boss has also been kicked out of the White House with disgrace. But the Islamic Republic is still standing on its feet with God's grace. The nuclear deal was to control Iran's nuclear program and none else. But for argument's sake, Foreign Minister Zarif said, when Iran has no nuclear weapons, talk about missiles with nuclear warheads is meaningless. Secondly, the parties to the JCPOA, whose annual sales of weapons to the region have amounted to over $100 billion, are in no position to tell Iran to forgo its missile defenses. The Europeans and Americans should know that we will not discuss what has already been resolved. This would be against the rules of negotiation.
That's it for today. Thanks for watching from the whole team. The episode has come to an end, but remember, the show goes on. Bye for now.
Muhammad is my guide, Muhammad is my teacher, Muhammad my beloved Rasulullah.
I want to be like you.
Like you.
In everything I do, Ya Rasulullah.
I want to walk like you, talk like you, read my Quran just like you.
And we have not sent you, but as a mercy to the world.
I want to be a servant of God like Muhammad.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Muhammad, Rasulullah.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Like Muhammad. I am Javed Akbari and we are going to talk about Allama Tabatabai's Sunan al-Nabi. This is, of course, a book written by Allama Tabatabai, who is one of the great scholars. And Sunan al-Nabi is about the narrations of the Prophet and conducts and customs of the noble Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his family. The Quran is the book of guidance. ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ. In the religion of Islam, most of the actions and deeds, especially the acts of worship, are accompanied by some etiquette and special manners. In Majma' al-Bayan, under the commentary of Surah al-Ikhlas, Majma' al-Bayan is one of the Shi'it books. It is all about tafsir, about the exegesis of the Holy Quran. It has been reported that the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, would stop at the end of every ayah of this verse when he recited قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهُ أَحَدٌ اللَّهُ السَّمَدٌ لَمْ يَلِدْ وَلَمْ يُولَدْ. He would stop, he would think, he would contemplate, and he would ponder over each verse of this Surah Al-Ikhlas. Okay. Now this shows that it is important, according to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, to not make haste while reciting the Holy Quran. Now again, in Ad-Dur Al-Manthur, written by As-Suyuti, one of the Sunni scholars, there is a report from Aisha who said, I would wake up with the Prophet at night, and of course he would recite from Surah Al-Baqarah and Surah Al-Imran and Surah An-Nisa, and when he came to an ayah that gave glad tidings to the believers, he would supplicate and hope. And when he came to an ayah that threatened the disbelievers, he would supplicate and seek refuge. This shows the manner that which we should follow while reciting the Quran, the manner, the etiquette of reciting the Holy Quran. And then there is another report from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, that he said that whoever recites Surah At-Talaq and Surah At-Tahrim in his obligatory prayers will be protected by Allah from being among those who are afraid and dejected on the Day of Judgment. He will be protected from hellfire, and Allah will put him in paradise because of his recitation of these two surahs, Surah At-Talaq and Surah At-Tahrim. So this shows how significant these two surahs are, Surah At-Talaq and Surah At-Tahrim. And he will be protected. One of the results and the aftermath of reciting the Quran, these two surahs, is that he will not be dejected on the Day of Judgment. And he will be protected from hellfire. And Allah will put him in paradise because of the recitation of these two verses. And also because of his acting upon them. This is one of the reports. And also in Tafsir al-Mizan from Ad-Dur al-Manthur, it has been reported from Ibn Abbas that when the Quran was revealed to the Holy Prophet would make haste in reciting it in order to preserve it, okay, in order to memorize it, okay. But all of a sudden, an ayah was revealed to the Prophet. The ayah advised the Prophet not to make haste. La tuharrik bihi lisanaka lita'jil bihi. Okay. Now, this verse was revealed to the Prophet to tell him not to make haste. Recite it in slow pace. Recite it slowly. And it's not good to make haste. But of course, the Prophet made haste in order to make sure that he memorized those verses and he learned those verses by heart. Because there was another verse going to be revealed to the Prophet, and he had to memorize those verses, he had to learn those verses by heart, and then dictate those verses to the scribes so that they could jot those verses down.
Is to be with you.
Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina Mustafa ala Habibika Nabika Mustafa. Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina Mustafa ala Habibika.
In any case or anyways, this verse of the Quran actually directed to the Prophet, peace be upon him, advises him not to make haste in reciting the Quran, and no matter what may be the purpose, okay? Also, after this verse, whenever Jibreel came to the Holy Prophet, he would remain silent and listen. And when he had gone, the Prophet would recite the ayah as he had been revealed to him by Allah. All of the verses, not only some of the verses, of course, all the Holy Quran was first revealed to the Holy Prophet, and it was revealed through Jibreel. He would recite it to the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and the Holy Prophet would memorize it and would learn the verses of the Holy Quran by heart. And then after the Jibreel went away, then the Holy Prophet would read the verses again, would practice those verses again, so as to maintain them, so as to preserve them and keep learn them by heart. There is also another report in Tafsir al-Qummi. The Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, would sit in his room and recite the Holy Quran. Now, this is the last report you can find in Sunan al-Nabi, written by Allama Tabatabai. May Allah bless his soul. This report, which is in Tafsir al-Qummi, and also this report, as you can read it also in the same book, Sunan al-Nabi, suggests that while reciting the Holy Quran, we should seclude ourselves, sit in a room, in a private room, which is calm and quiet, and engage in reciting the Holy Quran. Because when you recite the Holy Quran in a crowded place where there is hue and cry, when there is noise, you will not be able to focus on the Holy Quran. You will not be able to concentrate. Concentration is a key element in understanding the Holy Quran and also learning it by heart, and also comprehending the Holy Quran. Comprehension, okay, is very much crucial. Let me conclude it that the Quran is a book of guidance. It is a book that ensures and guarantees one's salvation, prosperity, and happiness if it is understood properly and if it is acted upon. As long as you act upon the Holy Quran and understand it and act according to your understanding, of course, then you're not to blame. But if you just read it without understanding, there is less reward, there is less, of course, benefit than when you understand it and act upon it. Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Be like Muhammad and live like Muhammad and give like Muhammad gave. Shafi'ullah, Habibullah, Nabiullah, Rasulullah, Khalilullah, the friend of Allah, ya Rasulullah.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of al-Baqir was given to the imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
قال الإمام الباقر عليه السلام: عالم ينتفع بعلمه أفضل من 70,000 عابد.
Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam stated, "The knowledgeable man who is beneficial to others as a result of his knowledge is better than 70,000 worshippers."
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. There are very beautiful conversations, beautiful dialogues in the historical texts of the Muslims. Now we find that there are these beautiful conversations in the life of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam. And so Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, being the fifth divinely appointed imam, he talked with his companions over several matters. In one of these places, Imam al-Baqir, talking to his companion in a dialogue, says, "He who disobeys Allah does not recognize him."
It's interesting at this point, before I continue, but surely if one were to recognize Allah, if one knew what the status and the position and the honor and the greatness and the absolute power that Allah has, truly we would not disobey Him. And so it is as Imam al-Baqir says, that when we disobey Allah, mighty and exalted is He, when we disobey Allah, it means that we haven't recognized Allah. We haven't understood who Allah is, what position they have, what authority they have over us. And so after this, Imam al-Baqir composes a beautiful piece of poetry where he says, "Do you disobey the Lord and show your love for Him by your life? This is an innovation among deeds. If your love was truthful, you would obey Him. Indeed, the lover obeys Him who he loves." A beautiful way to end this segment with these words of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, which he had in this conversation with his companion. "Indeed, the lover obeys Him whom he loves." And so, if we love Allah, we must obey Him as well. Beautiful pieces of advice put forth in this dialogue between a companion and Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
Indeed, you and I recognize to be a hallmark of the life of the sixth Imam to his holy son is the eagerness to undertake a number of very important debates, discussions, and rise to the responsibility as far as being challenged is concerned, meaning that the characteristics of the movement of the fifth and the sixth Imam was very much understood to be related to the response to the ideological, theological, philosophical discussions of the time. In other words, that they were able not only to respond but also welcome the various different beliefs in order for a healthy debate to be undertaken and for it to take place. Our fifth Imam, Imam Baqir alayhi salam, one day was in Damascus, was in Sham. Abu Basir, who was a narrator and a companion of the fifth and the sixth Imams, he narrates that the fifth holy Imam, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, says, "I was on my way towards meeting the or being recalled by the Umayyad rulers. He said, when I was going, I saw a group of people entering into what looked like a cave or something that was dark or narrow. And I noticed a lot of people are walking towards that place. I asked the people, where are you going? They said, we are going to meet a man who has knowledge that no one else has. He has superior knowledge. I said, where is this man? They said, this man is inside. He is known for his excellence in understanding and ilm. Imam says, I decided to go and enter where people were entering. He said, we entered in this particular area where I saw many people sitting, and all of a sudden an elderly man came forward. The elderly man was so frail that he had to somehow hold his eyebrows from covering his eyes. There was something that was holding his eyebrows up, and he sat. Immediately, Imam al-Baqir says, that elderly gentleman was intrigued because of my presence. And I became aware of the fact that he was a Christian priest, a man very much honored and respected by the people. He said, when I looked at him, he looked at me and says, are you of the community who claim to be blessed from the marhumin, from the people who have the rahmah? And Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam says, yes, I am one of them. This is an important point. This scholar, priest, then asks Imam al-Baqir, are you of the scholars or are you of the ignorant ones? Which ones are you? Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam says, I am not one of the ignorant ones.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
As the world nears the one-year mark from when the coronavirus outbreak was officially declared a pandemic, a United Nations envoy raised alarm about the looming threat of food shortages, explaining that many problems which experts warned about in the early days of the crisis have been deferred rather than resolved. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jessica Corbett Ryder. This article is published under the heading, More Challenging This Year Than Last. UN Envoy Warns Global Food Crisis Getting Worse, Not Better. Stay tuned for the details, please. As the world nears the one-year mark from when the coronavirus outbreak was officially declared a pandemic, a United Nations envoy raised alarm about the looming threat of food shortages, explaining that many problems which experts warned about in the early days of the crisis have been deferred rather than resolved. We are facing a greater threat this year as economies have shrunk. Agnes Kalibata, Special Envoy to the UN Secretary General for the Food Systems Summit 2021, told The Guardian in an exclusive interview. That is happening across the globe everywhere. Countries are in a very distressed situation, and it is not getting easier. It is getting more difficult. Some countries have hung on, but for how long? Though food chain supply issues and increased demand for hunger relief have impacted countries around the world, including the United States of America, during the pandemic, Kalibata highlighted rising prices in Thailand and various African countries. She is president of the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, AGRA, which has earned her some criticism, and formerly served as Rwanda's Minister of Agriculture. The UN experts said that in the face of the public health crisis, the past year many countries used whatever opportunity they had to keep their food systems going. Alongside a COVID-19 death toll that keeps climbing despite multiple vaccines, the price of food is increasing in some cases very fast, which is really challenging. As the coronavirus pandemic and the global economic crisis it has provoked continue, more countries are likely to be drawn into difficulties, added Kalibata. We have not been able to strengthen our reserves. Now they are under pressure. In other words, she said, food is looking more challenging this year than last year. Kalibata, whose comments come ahead of a food system summit expected in September, emphasized the importance of making food both accessible by continuing to move it from where it's produced to where it's distributed, and affordable, especially considering that people worldwide are still losing jobs and income. The economy is shrinking and that it is impacting millions of people, she said, encouraging governments to stay vigilant amid vaccine rollouts. Social protection is very important. We also need to keep prices down. We need to keep food available and we need to strengthen markets, ensure markets are working despite the crisis, she added. Echoing a wide range of experts throughout the pandemic, such as renowned primatologist and conservationist Jane Goodall, who declared in June that we have brought this on ourselves because of our absolute disrespect for animals and environment, Kalibata also called for learning from how humanity's destruction of nature has heightened the threat posed by zoonotic diseases, saying that we need to look at how we as human beings manage the planet. The Guardian's report came on the heels of an opinion piece Kalibata wrote recently for DevEx, a media platform for the global development community, arguing that global food systems can only be truly transformed with a people's summit. In anticipation of the September event, the planning for which preceded the pandemic, Kalibata made the case that countries, governments, and the public need to transform the way they engage with and think about entire food systems, recognizing that current systems don't work for many, especially the world's most marginalized and vulnerable. She wrote that not only does the planet need improved policies, markets, and processes, it also needs new mechanisms for developing this reimagined system from the first seed to the last spoonful. Looking ahead to what she called a make-or-break year, Kalibata also reflected on success stories during the pandemic, pointing to crowdsourced meals and mock COP26 talks by youth climate activists as a source of hope for what can be achieved when people around the world are enabled and encouraged to join forces for good. Making global food systems more inclusive, nutritious, sustainable, and resilient, she explained, requires participation from public and private sectors, companies and consumers, authorities and individuals who are all willing to share platforms, ideas, and learnings on a global level like never before. To that end, she noted, the Food Systems Summit dialogues, as well as a network of food systems champions and heroes, to advocate not only for better food systems, but for better and greater engagement from everyone. So in 2021, I hope to see governments working more closely with the private sector and taking on recommendations on how to manage trade-offs, including repurposing agricultural subsidies toward producing healthier and more sustainable food, she wrote. Retailers and consumers also have a responsibility to reduce food waste, and civil society can be an engine of engagement better to drive progress, unquote.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah.